52 years. Now, some might say that's about 20 years longer than any sensible person would stay in a job. And I would have agreed with that until I started to count up my almost 30 years of membership here. And at that point, it didn't seem such a long time. But think for a moment about what 52 years actually means. Ernest Saville Hicks took up his post here in 1910. He was standing in this pulpit during a series of seismic events for this city. The Dublin lockout, when the city was raw with hunger and anger, when the guns of the First World War opened up across Europe. At Easter 1916, when the city was suddenly on fire. He was here when three young men from this congregation went to that war and did not come home. He was here during the War of Independence, navigating curfews and military checkpoints. He was here in 1921 when the state was founded and when it almost immediately tore itself apart in civil war. I believe he was involved in negotiating that febrile, barely peace of 1923. He was here through the labor struggles of the 1920s, the arguments about what this new country could be and should be, the fights for decent housing, for workers' rights, for universal suffrage. He was here in the 1930s as the Depression ground down into the poverty already worn through the city. He was here as the Eucharistic Congress swept through Dublin and the Catholic hierarchy quietly, firmly began to extend its reach into the corners of public and private life. He was here as the Spanish Civil War split opinion at dinner tables across Ireland. He was here as the shadow of Hitler grew longer across Europe, and still here through the long, terrible years of the Second World War. Regardless of our neutrality, the war came into this city and into our families. He was still here in the 1950s and early 1960s as people began quietly and against considerable resistance to push for more progressive, more humane ways to live. 52 years. He died in May 1962 without ever retiring. He welcomed people into this church, he married them, and he buried them. He officiated at the wedding of Moisey and Charlie McCaw. And there are people here today who remember him warmly, which is perhaps the most any of us can hope for. When I volunteered to give this address, I thought of it as a straightforward historical chronological piece. I agreed with Gavin that in any consideration of Saville Hicks, I would do the history, he could do the theology, each of us reverting to our own kind of expertise. But history is not a straightforward narrative, instead a type of detangling, combing out the knotted strands, and I am sort of a philosophical hairdresser. And so remembering E. Saville Hicks has been more difficult than I thought. Any time over the past few months when I've talked to people about him, I've heard new and fascinating stories. And this is the first of what could easily be a multi-part series, not committing myself to doing any further addresses. But consequently, I'm choosing here to focus on his early years, from the 1910s and 1930s, mostly because this is my own area of historical expertise, but also because there's just too much to cover otherwise. So let's start with the facts. A profile in the Irish Times in 1960, marking his Golden Jubilee, and his election as moderator of the NSPCI outlines his background. He was born in Lancashire in 1877 and attended Jesus College, Oxford. His family had lived in both Scotland and Northern Ireland, where they became Unitarians. Saville Hicks decided to take orders and trained as a Unitarian minister in Manchester College, graduating in 1901. His first appointment was in Lancashire, and from 1903 to 1910, he was minister at Islington in London, during which time he married Mabel Ormrod. He was appointed minister of this church, and at his installation on March the 31st, 1910, almost exactly 116 years after Gavin's installation, it was noted that the church was decorated with beautiful spring flowers, as ours was also last week. The order of service for the 1910 installation lists a reading from St. Paul's letters to Timothy, which I attempted to identify in the hope of including it today. Having now read Paul's advice to Timothy, all I can say is, poor Timothy. What a pinched and joyless view of the world. And I really hope that the reading was not Paul's instruction that women should learn in silence, refrain from teaching, refrain from arguing, and on no account speak, because that is more or less my entire career. So Saville Hicks' time here began. His output, energy, and varied social, cultural, and political interests are challenging to map as they branch out in many directions. He gave two different addresses every Sunday, one at 12 noon and one at 7 in the evening, and he also spoke often at events during the week. Some of his addresses were printed and circulated as pamphlets through the Irish Unitarian Christian Society, established in 1830. The subjects chosen for public distribution reveal what our church thought important. The first pamphlet, printed in 1911, is called The Right to Think. Other pamphlets set afloat into Irish life during the Free State years were called The Loneliness of Life, Is Religion Losing Its Hold, The Spirit of the Age, The Difficulty of Unbelief, Live and Let Live, and The Soul of the Nation. What richness of ideas at such a time. His papers are now in the Royal Irish Academy, so for the most part my information is drawn from newspapers in which the titles of his weekly addresses and occasional lectures are advertised. And this is how I know that during his first year, he gave four addresses called Four Faiths and Their Founders on Buddha, Muhammad, Confucius, and Zoroaster. During these years, he spoke often on religious freedom, with addresses titled A Rational Faith, The God of Silence, the aforementioned The Right to Think, The Evolution of Conscience, The Unitarian Faith, Atheism, and Agnosticism. Talks on literature included Oliver Goldsmith, Thomas Carlyle, Dante, Tennyson, Umar Khayyam, Dickens, Shelley, Marcus Aurelius, Robert Burns, Arthur Conan Doyle, Arnold Bennett, and a series on the relationship between religion and the stage. He spoke on censorship and Egyptian culture and what it means to be human. He was a man interested in the boundaries of science, of death, of life, and the afterlife, about which he talked often, both here in this church and in public lectures. He was a member of the Society for Psychical Research and spoke many times on spiritualism, reincarnation, and psychic energy, including some great titles: Wireless Messages, The Lesson of the X-Ray, The Reality of Things Unknown, and The Traces of Forgotten Things. He was present at a seance in 1915 with the well-known psychic Hester Travers Smith, George Yates, wife of W.B., and Lennox Robinson, the playwright and a director at the Abbey Theatre. His role was to record the proceedings, something for which he was apparently well known, when, allegedly, the words of Sir Hugh Lane came through. Lane was returning from America on a ship called the SS Lusitania, and Mrs. Travers Smith only found out the following day that the ship had been torpedoed and Hugh Lane had drowned. Bethel Solomons, the eminent physician, recalls in his memoirs how he had worked with Saville Hicks to devise treatments for what sounds like early applications of hypnosis and psychotherapeutic techniques. Saville Hicks was a man interested in social justice and equality. He spoke often against poverty and poor housing. Through him, we get an insight into the work of this church and the people associated with it. He officiated at the funeral of Margaret Huxley, commemorated by the Huxley Window. She was a pioneer of nursing. She founded the first nursing home in Ireland and oversaw the building of 10 houses in Cork Street in a crescent which still bears her name. The congregation supported the financing of the crescent by running a two-day jumble sale, which I sort of think that must have been some quality jumble in Reefords. A less well-known member was Avram or Adrian Golden, who had been a political prisoner in Russia. Jewish by birth, he considered himself a communist and a Unitarian, and is buried in Mount Jerome. Saville Hicks conducted the service there in 1911, which was attended also by James Larkin and Francis Sheehy Skeffington. Hicks visited member Marguerite Palmer in Mountjoy Prison after she was arrested for breaking windows in Dublin Castle at a suffragette protest. He was an advocate for women's rights, speaking out on the sweated conditions of numbers of women workers, it's a quotation, at the Irish Women's Reform League. It's not surprising for me to find him there, as the League connected the campaign for women's political rights with broader questions of poverty, workers' conditions, and social justice. In 1916, he spoke on casualties in peace and war, and during the following years, he spoke out against sectarianism. Outside his clerical and pastoral duties, he also found time to write a novel called The Moth and the Flame, 1931. I haven't yet found a copy, but it's described as a novel, quote, that deals with the drug problem and introduces the subject of psychoanalysis. Moreover, it has a strong love interest and an old-fashioned happy ending. Should add that to the book club reading. He was interested in film. He was the chairman of the Dublin Cinema Renter Society and mediated in the cinema union labour strikes in 1924. At this point, it may help to mention that the Hicks household employed, at the very least, a butler. And I offer this not as a social observation, but as a public service, so that none of us feel entirely inadequate by comparison. Radio offered him a new way to speak to broader audiences about one of his great loves, music. He became known as a broadcaster, introducing the works of Wagner, Tchaikovsky, Beethoven, and the operas of Puccini and Verdi, amongst others, on the national radio station when it was set up in 1926. During the 1930s, he broadcast live from this church, prefacing a performance with a talk on the music. He was described as being, quote, highly dramatic in his delivery with never a dull moment for his listeners. So two examples of concerts from the 1930s. In 1934, the paper of record declared that one of the most interesting events should lie in the relay from the Unitarian Church, St. Stephen's Green, Dublin, where the Reverend Several Hicks will give an illustrated lecture talk on Wagner personalities. Mr. Hicks is well known for his powers of description as a lecturer of wide knowledge and one who can make even the dullest subject highly interesting. In 1936, a radio listing reads, 9 o'clock, lecture, Tchaikovsky, The Man and His Music, arranged by Reverend Saville Hicks with Edith Mortier, soprano, and Arthur Thornton at the organ, relayed from the Dublin Unitarian Church, St. Stephen's Green. So the tradition of public live concerts from this church is probably a little older than we think. As if it wasn't busy enough, he also founded and edited the social magazine Irish Tatler and Sketch. With his wife Mabel, he was a well-known and award-winning dog breeder, especially fox terriers and dachshunds, and he acted as chairman of the Irish Kennel Club. Flann O'Brien, Miles Nagopoline, bought an Irish terrier from the Hickses, and then he fretted in his newspaper column, Cruiskeen Lawn, about whether his dog was a Unitarian dog, a Protestant dog, a Catholic dog, or a Jewish dog. A few years after his death, his successor, Kenneth Wright, inaugurated the Saville Hicks Memorial Lecture. It ran every 3 years between 1967 and 1988 as a series of free public lectures from invited speakers. The talks ranged from the place of religion and education, rural regeneration, well-being, human nature, and art and architecture. After 1988, the tradition seemed to die out. And perhaps this is something we may think about reincarnating in time for the 150th anniversary of Saville Hicks's birth in 2027. What does moral leadership look like for us? The great crises of our time are genuinely complex. The ecological emergency, the upheavals of technology, the fracturing of public life. Moral leadership begins somewhere quieter. Faithful attention, intellectual curiosity, loyalty, showing up week after week, year after year, decade after decade. What holds us here? Is it the architecture, the stained glass turning ordinary light into divine transcendence, the pillars that keep the church upright? Is it legacy? Is it the weight of those who were here before us? I was raised in a very different kind of faith, one that's plainly spoken, plainly decorated, doctrines certain of themselves. Yet in that certainty, I felt the pull towards other things. Where is there room for poetry when faith speaks only in prose? Saville Hicks was someone who moved easily between the spiritual and the secular, who extended his care into domains where religious engagement was unusual and sometimes unwelcome. He was curious about the full range of human experience. He was not afraid of the strange or the unresolved. 52 years is not simply a career. It is a life given in service. So finally, I did, after all, find a redeeming verse from St. Paul's letters to Timothy, which I hope was the verse read at Savile Hicks' installation and is offered here as an epitaph and tribute. It's from the second epistle, chapter 4, verse 7. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Amen. Amen.